Mickey Hart here. You're listening to the GAR Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR on a Monday in association with Paddy Power. It's myself and Conan here today. We can't get pundits on a bank holiday Monday, Conan. That's just the way it is. Keenan and Stevie, they up the prices too much.
Discipline issues. We love them to bits, but there was a little incident during the week, so we'll have them back next week.
Well, that's the interesting one with Seamus Quigley, actually, now that you mention it, because he was dropped for disciplinary reasons, and we've Rory Gallagher coming up on the show. I'm not sure if he's going to tell us what that was, but it's interesting. It was a very, very brave move, wasn't it, to drop your most important player, arguably, with the style of football that they play, like would Carlo drop Broderick? You know what I mean? That's the same thing. You need these lethal free takers and you need to be putting them over the bar. It worked out for them, but that was a brave call by Rory Gallagher.
Yeah, it's very ballsy, but you've seen in every sport when managers make those calls and it pays off, then it sort of just makes them stronger.
Oh, galvanises the squad. No, that's the risk. If the risk pays off, the squad knows, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah,
you know.
And
but if
Seamus
it doesn't,
Quigley sitting on the bench, and what can I do?
And not even brought on. And he says, "We love Seamus. He's been brilliant all year." There was a little incident, you know. Last week we had to put the team first. Unbelievable stuff here. Because if it was last week, you think, all right, well, it's not like it was during the week leading up to the game. Yeah, he had a full week, whatever he did.
Yeah.
I hope Rory tells us what he did.
Yeah. And now the message is clear. Now this is what you have to do to get in my team, or this is what you can't do. But as I say, we love Keane Ward to bits, but the GAR must come first, and that little incident where we have to punish him for it.
Right, now, so you know that I love hurling, and I'm getting tweeted a lot by hurling snobs. I present the hurling show, which will be coming up later, and they keep telling me that football's a waste of time. Well, it's all about the Munster Championship, it's all about the hurling, and it's hard to disagree with them. So then yesterday I went down to Kerry for a game that was a waste of time. I enjoyed maybe the first 15 minutes when it was a bit competitive, and then it was a waste of time. Galway Sligo was a waste of time, and then you had Monaghan Fermanagh, which I didn't see it, but I know exactly how that game worked. I know exactly what it was like, you know what I mean? There was very few scores from play and it was a battle. Now, this is the one. Here's a tweet from Rory Grugan. So you have a lot of Ulster football snobs who like to come out and they're very defensive about this whole style of play. And Rory Grugan wasn't the only one now. There was a lot of high profile, both journalists, both ex-players and all this, trying to put the boot in. So Rory Grugan said, the closely fought, tense and nail-biting Fermanagh and Monaghan game, or Kerry destroying Clare with lovely open football. I know which I'd rather watch. Hashtag Ulster says yes. Now, what I would say to Rory and all the other people tweeting that exact same thing, pitting one style of play against another, one was an extreme version of one and the other was an extreme version of the other. Why do we have to choose either one of these monstrosities? Why can't we find something in that middle? One's a 1 out of 10, the other's a 10 out of 10 on the scale of defensive being down one end and attacking on the other. Why can't we meet in the middle at a 5 and have everybody happy?
Yeah, well, I suppose Fermanagh people would argue that if they tried that, then they would lose horribly.
That's the thing.
You know, and then the game wouldn't be as interesting. Like, I just assumed that Fermanagh would lose that game, but then because of what they did, you're gripped until the very end. I remember going to Monaghan Tyrone thinking, this isn't going to be a good game, but at least I know it's going to be in the balance. And that's sort of what you want. That's the entertainment.
Well, here you go. Here's the answer for this, right? Because I understand that. And I understand why Fermanagh played the way they did. I understand why Carlo played the way they do. I understand that Fermanagh's tactics basically were designed to keep them in that game and the last 10 minutes that they were within touching distance. They were within touching distance and then they got the late goal. It's almost like a blueprint for why you would go that defensively against a stronger team. So, like, I mean, it's very, very obvious. That's when these teams, Division 3 playing Division 1, the obvious solution for this, and it's like the hurling, is that all the hurling in Munster are all Division 1 teams. They're all at the same standard. It's brilliant games. It's brilliant everything. Why can't we have the championship on a league basis, on the National League? And without getting into too much of this championship restructures, but if you had Division 1, 2, 3, 4, 1 and 2 is Division 1, 3 and 4 is Division 2. So the top 4 out of Division 1 go into All-Ireland, get into the All-Ireland Series, and the top 2 in Division 2. So you'll have 3 and 4 from Division 1 play 1 and 2 in All-Ireland quarterfinals.
Six teams, that is?
That's six teams. So the first place team and second place team in Division 1, which would probably be Kerry and Dublin, they're straight into semi-finals. Then 3 and 4 play 1 and 2 in Division 2. So you've got the bigger representation from, you know, the tougher divisions. Every team, every division is teams playing at their own level, because there are four distinct, remember my analysis of the four different league finals, yeah. There's a clear jump up in each one. They'll play their seven games against teams of their own standard, then they earn the right to get into that, you know, because, like, say for example, if it's two tiers of 16, you'll still have Kerry hammering Clare, you know what I mean, you'll still have those Kerry Dublin playing who are bottom of Division 2, which are still mismatches, but if you keep them in their own pens, their own four groups, like the league, which works so well, then the best teams out of the four meet each other then, you know what I mean, in knockout phases. That would give us a scenario in football that they have in hurling, and then we can rave about the football championship, yeah, very early in the year, because it's getting to the stage, Conan, football is under serious pressure from hurling. Like, it is, they have a much better structure to their championship.
Do you know what's like, It's funny though, I listened to the hurling during the week, or during the weekend, and it was actually really annoying. They're sort of on the other extreme of it, where people in football, they come out and they whinge about how shite it is, and they don't talk about the game or whatever, you know, why a team won or why a team did whatever they did. In hurling, they just talk about how great it is, and they don't talk about the game either. They just talk about how amazing their sport is. And
yeah,
I get that the games are class and they're exciting, but you can still get into the game as well, where I'm getting emotional here now about football, but, like, you know, yeah, all you ever hear is hurling people saying how great it is.
Yeah.
And all you ever hear is football people saying how shit it is.
No, you can't. We haven't said that with the hurling people. They basically have a Dublin Mayo All-Ireland final right the way through the year. Do
yeah,
you know what
Munster,
I mean?
But it's the Leinster one isn't as exciting.
No, like, Leinster's, you know, not as exciting. But the Munster Championship this year has just been beyond belief. Like, you know, and it's because they're all Division 1 teams. Leinster is the same. Leinster have Offaly getting hammered by Wexford, by Dublin. You know, they have one or two of, they have, you know, basically it's a little bit like the football in that there's a few one-sided games. There's a really good team like Galway against some teams that aren't as good as them, so they're winning easily. It's that's why Leinster hurling isn't as attractive as the Munster hurling, at five teams all on the same level. Do you know? Like, I mean, it's very obvious how to make this an awful lot better, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen, because, like, I mean, it's been a disaster for football. And then, of course, you have RTE, who I think they're on the wind-up. Like, you put Brawley and Spillane doing the analysis on Fermanagh Monaghan. Like, I mean, that's a recipe for disaster. Neither are willing to analyse those type of games. Neither of them want to be in any way positive about those games. So why would you put them on? Is it get the backlash on Twitter that potentially was there yesterday, because all I was seeing was how Brawley and Spillane are dinosaurs, and they were comparing them to the, who are those two fellas out of Trading Places, whatever the two of their name is. Anyways, Brawley and Spillane cannot be the ones analysing an Ulster Championship game. Like, I mean, it just can't happen, because they have they're too set in their ways about what football they want. And, like, I agree with them to a certain extent, but you're there to do a job, and it's not to say the same thing and whinge every single. And the gas thing about Brawley and Spillane, they never come up with solutions.
No.
When do you ever hear about how we could potentially fix this or come up with some sort of alternative championship, or even a rule change, tweak or two to make it more attractive? But do you want to make it more attractive and allow Fermanagh have no chance against Monaghan, like Clare against Kerry? I don't know. Like, I mean, it's definitely difficult, especially when there's so many differing polar opposite opinions. There's people out there that like that game in Ulster.
Yeah.
I can't like that. Yeah, I like the closeness of it, because we like competition, but Jesus, it's still, that kind of stuff is hard viewing.
Yeah, I don't like it, but as we say all the time, like, you know, it's not, we're not there to listen to whether or not Joe Brawley and Pat Spillane like it, and they don't analyse it. And Joe Brawley spent the whole half time whinging about it, and then Joanne Kentwell just said to him, but it's working. You know, so he wasted the 15 minutes rather than actually talk about what they were doing and why they were doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had heard Tyrone Dublin mentioned one more time, I was going to pull my hair out. I mean, what has that got to do with Fermanagh trying to get to an Ulster final for the first time in 10 years? All they had to do is talk about the match. I suppose going back to the championship restructures and stuff, the concern for people in the football world is, look at all those other hurling counties that are cut off from that senior championship.
Yeah.
You know, is that where it would go with football counties?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because you could easily have this scenario where the Division 1 and Division 2 teams, which make up Tier 1, they play on one weekend. Then you have 3 and 4, or mix and match, so that they're not all played on the same weekend, because that would happen. Like, I mean, just media organisations don't have enough journalists to be sending them out and giving them equal footing, and they don't deserve equal footing anyway, in my opinion. They don't. Division 4 team does not deserve the same airtime as Dublin or Kerry. They just don't. They're not good enough. But if you play them on alternate weekends, so you have 7 league games, right, at your own level, 100% at your own level, because it's 1, 2, 3, 4, then you get into the knockout. So you have 7 games. If you play them over 14 weeks, you have tier 1 one weekend, tier 2 the other weekend, where tier 2 have to get the, you know what I mean, they have to get the publicity, because they're the only football that's on that weekend.
But there's hurling as well, you know, so that will get the publicity.
Yeah, but hurling can get, the way the hurling championship is, they're getting publicity over football, any football at the moment. So which is better? Is it better that they slightly outshine the second tier in football, or is it better that they outshine the entire football championship?
I just think you would cut too many off, and like, you know, just 8 groups of 4, have it seeded, and then the best teams are all in the last 16. The bottom 2 of those 8 groups, they can go into the last 16 of the B championship, and then you have all these level games then going forward from the last 16 to quarterfinals, and it's just the best teams that are meeting at the right time of the year. That's what I think, that's the way to do it, and it means every year you come back and you're in the same competition again.
But is the fact that the Hurling Munster League of Division 1 teams, is that not the obvious thing, that look what they're getting now? Look what they're getting so early in the championship, is Division 1 teams playing each other. Under that, you would still have that same, you would still have the Sligo, Galway, the Clare, Kerry. You would still have a first month of dross, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, but it's almost like a stacked deck, because they only have 6 really good hurling counties, and then they're all playing each other at the minute.
But we have a Division 1 of 8. Outside that Division 1 of 8, there's none of the other, potentially the top 2 in Division 2, you know what I mean, could put it up to them. But like, I mean, we, football is the same as that. Let's be honest about this here. It's the same. Huge gap. Clare were 3rd in Division 2. Like, I mean, look at that gap. Like, I was down there yesterday. Like, I mean, talking about, like, I'll flick through Twitter watching the match up in Oma Park, because I'm bored of them playing around a screen. But I was flicking through Twitter the whole second half of the Kerry one, you know, because it was just, God, couldn't believe the difference in standard. Like, I could not believe how Kerry were that far ahead of the 3rd place team in Division 2.
Maybe I'm just, like, I just thought the gap was getting shorter. Like,
it's not.
I looked at Donegal, like, I looked at Monaghan beating Tyrone, thought, fuck, here we go. And then I looked at Fermanagh beating Monaghan, Leash's Little Rise, Carlo. Like, it's just, I felt like the gap is getting shorter between the top and the bottom.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. It's absolutely not. And, like, I mean, that was very, very obvious.
Excluding Dublin.
Yeah, it's so far ahead that you'd probably have, you really will have Division 1 and the rest, and then you've arguably Roscommon and Cavan going up to Division 1, and we know what happened both of them when they went up to Division 1 the last time. They're straight back down after not winning a game each, so you nearly have a top 6 now.
But that most sports do, it's hard to
I know that, but my point is, let that top 6-8 play each other more often, or else what's the point? Like, that's what hurling is doing. This is my point. The Munster Championship has hit home to me that this is the only way to do it. Do what hurling do.
See, my point again, like, it's like the World Cup thing. Like, you know, let those teams qualify into the last 16, and then they'll start meeting each other. Just bear with us. Be a bit patient. It's an all Ireland competition. Let them play, and then we'll have the best teams at the right time.
Yeah, you're what's holding change back. That's what you are. You are exactly what's holding change. Quickly before we move on, is Connacht GAA have confirmed Dr. Hyde Park will host the Connacht football final. Isn't that fantastic? Capacity 18,870. Well done to the Connacht Council, who you could say could have been stubborn here and maybe caused an argument and had a standoff with Roscommon. So they've obviously not gone down that road. It's not like I'm saying that they kind of bowed to Kevin McStay's pressure, but whatever the basis of their decision was, is that they've made the right decision as far as I'm concerned. But the ground won't be eligible for future finals until specified works are carried out, including new entrance, permanent toilets and dressing rooms that are built to modern standards. So Roscommon haven't fixed the bucket list that they wanted, and they've still given them the game, which actually paints the Connacht Council even in a better light for me.
Well, it's a bit like, well, hang on, is this ground fit or not? Like, you know, it's like we were saying the last time, is it ready? I just say well done to Kevin McStay. I think he was the strongest here. He had the poker face, and I think they bowed. Obviously, if they said it's not fit for the future finals, then it's not completely ready, but they're going with it anyway because of McStay's pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe someone could slip on a rock or something like that, and which is, we don't want to promote these kind of insurance claims. But listen, come here, we'll have to leave it there because delighted to say Rory Gallagher has joined us on the line now after Fermanagh's brilliant win yesterday. Rory, how's it going? I presume good today.
Yeah, listen, we're happy today. There's no doubt about that, Colm. You know, we're delighted to come out on the right side of a really tough battle, and we 3 weeks now to get ready for another final, and it's a great position to be in for the Fermanagh players, you know.
Yeah, you text me back at 7 a.m. this morning, so were you just getting in at that stage, or is this a whole new kind of way of celebrating a semi-final?
Oh, we celebrated, but with your three kids, you can't lie in, you know. That's the unfortunate thing, you know. Oh, no, we celebrated, but I don't think I lasted as long as some of them did, you know. But no, I left them in Enniskill, and last night I headed home to my home place in Ballina, but they were in fine form when I left them at 10 o'clock, you know.
When you talked about how that game was going to go, Rory, and you set your team up the way you did it almost go exactly according to plan? Because we know that you're a couple of levels below Monaghan, and was the plan to stay in the game as long as you could and be in with a chance on 70 minutes of winning the game?
Well, we would have planned and hoped to be ahead,
right?
You know, and I would have been disappointed at half time, you know, that we'd only 6 points on the board. We'd had a lot of possession, Colm, you know, and I'd be 5-0 up, and you know, fair control of the game at that stage. We missed a couple of chances, and at 6-4, you know, the tide was turning, and you know, we were struggling really. You know, we were running out of legs, we were struggling to get scores anywhere. So it was unfortunate to be 2 points down. But look, you know, we got a wee break then with the high ball in the square, and no one got a good flick yet. But you know, we were ahead for an awful lot of the game, and you know, while it seems as if it was dramatic, you know, from the point of view of coming from behind, we were in the lead for most of the game, and I would have been very disappointed if I hadn't got something out of the game, you know.
Yeah, but you must have thought when Monaghan went two ahead, it was 69 minutes, that was the way that game had panned out and was so low scoring that your chance was gone.
Yeah, listen, you know, the way we were struggling for scores, Colm, but that's, you know, that day, even when Tomás kicked his first three, we'd been struggling for them, and they went two up and we got it back to one, and then they went two up again, and you did feel it was slipping away, there's no doubt. But we felt we could, you know, we always felt we had a chance if we could keep it to 2 points. But you know, the goal was a massive score, but at that stage it was unlikely we were going to get 3 points to win it, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, I didn't actually see the game, I just saw highlights because I was down in Killarney, but like, I mean, the two Aidan Breen scores in the first half, like he had a lot of space for those two scores. Like, I mean, there was only three from play in the whole game, but like, I mean, just from looking at the highlights, it was like, if Aidan Breen had that much room for those two scores, how was there not more scores in the game? But was it were they just one off kind of situations?
Yeah, probably were. You know, I think maybe they left him in a bit of space, you know, early on in the game, and he didn't have a bit of damage. He actually had a third shot that could have went over the bar as well, Colin, you know. But after that, probably our things would play slowed a wee bit, you know, and you know, we probably weren't getting through the middle third as quick as we'd like, and you know, we needed to create a few more overlaps, but we didn't do it, you know. I thought after going 5-1 up and starting fairly well, we just lost that wee bit of energy, and look, manning up the ante, you know, physically as well, and the tackled up a bit harder as well, you know.
Yeah, Tomás O'Shea did a little bit of analysis on Monaghan yesterday, and he was talking about the loop pass and how, you know, you had enough men back and you were disciplined in the tackle, but we were kind of thinking that a loop isn't enough now with that many men back, that you have to nearly go in threes and fours, and a lot of teams maybe are a little bit afraid of committing that many bodies in case they get hit on the counter. Is that kind of the game of cat and mouse that goes on?
Ah, that's a wee bit of that, you know. I know from our point of view, we feel we have to commit the bodies, you know. So it is when a team has, you know, whether it's, you know, 12, 13 or whatever back, close to 45, the only way of beating them is throwing more numbers at it, really,
yeah.
You know. You've got to go at it in waves and that sort of thing. And you've got to be able to kick long range scores as well, because a lot of teams are very disciplined. We're obviously very pleased with our discipline, but, you know, you have to be able to kick them long range scores as well. And we've been disappointed. We were able to thread a bit more ball into a full forward line. Against Armagh, we didn't really have as much joy at that. Now, I know Monaghan are good at sweeping that area and that, you know, but we'd be a wee bit disappointed we didn't get some balls rather than, you know, a bit of quality ball into the boys inside either, you know.
Yeah. What do you make of the criticism of that style of football, Rory? Because, like, I mean, you're coaching it a while now, and the game, it's kind of changed from in 2012 with Donegal. Like, he played a really attacking brand of counter-attacking football, but those counter-attacks, because managers are a lot more tactically astute now, you don't get as many of those kind of free-flowing counter-attack scores. There's a lot of, you know, working the ball around outside the 45s.
I think, you know, we came along in 2011 and definitely 2012, and, you know, we played in the quarterfinal, Kerry, Cork and Mayo, who had very traditional games, and whenever we had bodies back, we were able to break and counter-attack people, and we were able to expose them, but they've all adapted that. People forget that. You know, we played a very titanic tussle game against Tyrone in the provincial semi-final, and Tyrone mirrored what we were doing. You know, we both of them, it was only 12-10, you know, but teams have caught on to that now, and you know, everybody's getting 11, 12, 13 men behind the ball, and it does become difficult to break down. And look, we Donegal had a great run at it, and for a while we got away with it, and obviously teams caught on then. But I think that, you know, I think it's just the way the game has evolved. You know, I can understand that there's criticism of it, but, you know, you have to remember, you know, 50% of the game's defending. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So there's not. You know, we'd like to get better at both in Fermanagh. I think every team would, but 50% of the game's defending. I think there's nobody better at it than Dublin. They may not play a zonal type system, but they get 15 men behind the ball an awful lot. You know, the tremendous display against Tyrone. They did that massively. And the very good man markers, and they struck the opposition's key men as well. And, you know, I think, you know, I think it's just the way the game's evolved.
Yeah. Do you see it evolving away from that? Because, like, I mean, you just look at your results yesterday. Like, I mean, if Fermanagh were to play Monaghan, like, a little bit more traditional, not many people would give Fermanagh a chance. Do you see it moving away? We see Carlo doing so well with it. When results and joy can be gained from doing this and the game goes kind of into a stalemate, do you see it evolving away?
I don't really, you know. I think that, you know, I think, say, for example, Carlo are obviously very ambitious, and, you know, they've came with a style of play that the field suits them. We're the same, you know. We feel this style of play suits ourselves, so it does. You know, we may not have the pace up front off the, you know, the Dublins, say, for example, or Kerry's and that type of thing. So we have got to try to play a game that suits the players that we have, you know, and gives us the best chance of getting results. And the joy the boys get out of but if working hard, and, you know, they want to have their day in the sun, you know, the same as the Dublin players and the Kerry players, and I think they're entitled to go about it the way they want. You know, at the end of the day, soccer, basketball, they all get into a defensive formation. It's the way, in my opinion, team sports are, you know. I think there's a lot of overreaction to it. It's not as if teams are, yes, our Ulster game yesterday was low scoring. The scoring rate in the championships has been huge the last number of years, so it is. So it's not as if a lot of teams are defending any better. It's just the way they're defending.
Yeah, you do a lot of work on your tackling, because like, there's nothing worse than when some fella has a fella stood up and he's disciplined, the second lad coming in and giving away the foul. I'm sure managers tear their hair out of that kind of thing. But you just looking from the highlights last night, like, I mean, it's hands on, hands off, and there's no easy fouls being given away as much as possible.
No, yeah, exactly. Listen, we obviously, you know, it's a very important part of the game, and then when you're coming up against Conor McManus and Rory Beggan, it highlights it even more. And, you know, it's something that I wouldn't take too much credit for. Rice has done a massive amount of work with them on it.
Right.
So he has, you know, individually as well, you know, and he has with the coming out with the ball, attacking, you know, we have the Pullens or whatever, the man markers and different attackers. They've got to be comfortable on the ball as well. But yes, they've worked very hard on it, and it can be very deflating if you have two, three people round a man and you give away a silly free within discipline, or even if your body's back and you give away a free. Some frees have to be given away because players are, you're under that much pressure, players going to get through. Like, once or twice Carlo Connell caught us, but we'd be very pleased with that aspect of it. We didn't give away a huge number of.
Yeah, and the one thing about Fermanagh and why they probably do suit this style of play is that they're all good ball players. Like, I mean, they're all very comfortable on the ball and smart on the ball. And that, for as long as I remember Fermanagh, even when they're back getting into Ulster finals against Armagh, they're all kind of ballers. Like, I'm sure you know them better than me.
Yeah. There's definitely not, you know, you know, even though you go back to that Fermanagh team, that was fairly strong, you know. You know, got the Ulster side and those moving and that, and they played a very possession oriented game as well.
Did, yeah.
The likes of Mark Lynch, and Maguire coming back, they had a sweeper in Ryan McCluskey long before a lot of teams did, you know, and that was the style of play that suited them, you know, so it has, you know. They are coming well. We worked hard at it, you know, we felt that maybe there's a lot of basic errors being given away, even going back to the Monaghan game last year, and some, you know, a lot of cheap turnovers given away and run into troubles. We worked hard at that, you know, and give the players good credit. They become that wee bit smarter, but look, it's what they do now in the next 3 weeks is going to be the main thing, you know.
Yeah, no, it definitely will. Come here, the Seamus Quigley call, that was a massive call considering how important he is to your team with his freeze and, you know, everything. Like, he's been your talisman all year. What went on there?
Look, not overly get into the ins and outs, but yes, it was a big decision for ourselves and the management, you know. Unfortunately, there was a bit of an incident earlier in the week, you know, that just was effectively goes against the team ethos, and we kept it very quiet, you know. Look, but we felt it was in the best interest of the team that Seamus started out, you know. So it is. Look, he's been a big part of us all year, Colin, you know, and he's a great lad. We've absolutely loved having him there. He's a bundle of energy and a bundle of joy at every single training session. So he is, you know. So look, we move on now, and you know, it's all to play for Seamus now for the next 3 weeks. You know, he's a great trainer, you know, and he's a great player, and we'd like him chomping at the bit now for us to final, you know.
Right. Okay. So he was tugged out. How did he take the decision? Did he accept it?
Listen, naturally disappointed. So he was, but you know, he's a bright boy. He knows, you know, that he was wrong, and he understands that, you know. So he did. Look, he, you know, there's nobody would have wanted to be on the field as much as Seamus, you know. But listen, we don't feel we're overly harsh with regards to the boys having a bit of fun after the Armagh game. You know, there's no point in, you know, training all year and winning championship matches and not letting their hair down. They did do that. But
yeah.
Just thought it wasn't the best of the team, you know, to play in this week, you know.
Right, okay, because it must have been bad if he didn't even get on. But look, I mean, like you're saying, he's available for selection now for the final. It's just like it's a wrap on the knuckles for that day.
100%, yeah. We move on now, and we're delighted. As I said, he's played an awful lot of football this year. He's got himself in real good shape, and you know, every day he's a training's a better day, because he's you never know what's around the corner with him. There's plenty of fun with him, you know.
Yeah, is it more enjoyable managing your own county?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that, you know, Colin. You know, it's different. You know, I'm a long time gone out of it, you know, and, you know, between, you know, going to Dublin and being in Belfast, you know, having lived in Fermanagh, you know, so you're only in and out, you know. It is almost different, man. You were involved in Donegal, and you're meeting Donegal people all the time. You know, I don't meet that many Fermanagh people. You know, you're in and out the training, you're getting on with your life, but no, it's getting to know them, and you're getting to know faces that, you know, you haven't seen in a long time as well, you know. But that's definitely enjoying it. At the minute, Colin, it's a great, you know, feeling to look forward to an Ulster final. And Fermanagh, obviously, was well documented, they've never won one. So it's a great challenge now for the boys over the next number of weeks.
Yeah, and I suppose there's two ways of looking at this, just to finish up, is that Fermanagh have never won one, so they're going in as underdogs, so there's no pressure. But then never having won one, I would see that as a big pressure to get that monkey off your back as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And there's a great satisfaction if you would ever be the first team to do anything, you know. So it is, and that'd be brilliant if that in our eyes. But look, when we got involved and, you know, sat down with Ricey, you know, and she and Roland, and then met the players, you know, we weren't interested in 2 or 3 year plans. It was a 6 or 7 month plan, because it's quite an experienced team we have, Colin, you know. And
yeah,
they would feel they've been unfortunate and maybe haven't got the success, you know, in championship matches that they felt they were capable of, you know, and you know, they were disappointed to lose their Division 2 status last year. So it's a fairly experienced team that haven't got much, you know, many years in the shop window. Some of them, you know, left, you know, Owen Donnelly, it's been a long time. You know, Barry Malone, you know, they're 30, you know, they're knocking about a long time now. You have the McCluskers, you have the two Cullens, you have the two Corrigans, they're all them guys are in the panel. The two Quigley, Sean Quigley, Seamus Quigley, them the guys in the panel 7, 8 years, a lot of them, you know.
Yeah, so winning an Ulster title will be a first for Fermanagh, but I think you're the first Fermanagh team to be congratulated by Arlene Foster as well.
I wasn't aware of that. No, I wasn't, but we don't appreciate that very much, you know.
Did you see that tweet? No, congratulations to my
friend. I didn't.
She tweeted yesterday, you know. She retweeted the result from RTE and said, congratulations to my fellow county men who have just surprised those in the know. So there you go, Rory. You're building bridges. maybe you're the
cross-community work as well.
Maybe you're the man to broker a deal here between Sinn Féin and the DUP now.
I'll stay well out of that. I don't know if he was involved with the FPLC, and we'll leave it to him. He's retired out of it now.
Yes, I would advise that too. Rory, thanks very much for taking the call.
No bother, Colin. Cheers.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even start, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
So I was down in Killarney yesterday. I went down all kind of excited about seeing some sort of contest. I think we did actually say that Clare plus the 8 points was the bet that we'd all go with. I did anyways, I remember.
It was the one bet I'd gotten right, this championship.
Oh, you said that Kerry would beat the 8, did you?
I said just about.
Right, just about. Jesus, how wrong we were. A 22-point hammering. And I spoke with Kerry manager Eamon Fitzmaurice after the match, so here's how that went.
Eamon, what can you tell us about that game? You know, 32 points, it's not often you see that kind of a score run up.
No, it isn't. Look, I can't remember the last time. I can't ever remember being involved in a Kerry team, either on the sideline or playing, where we put up such a big points total in particular. So you'd have to be very happy with that. I think the lads that came on, you know, to finish the game all showed that they were champing at the bit as well, and they wanted to get their piece of action, and that kind of kept the energy high through the whole game. So you'd have to be very happy with that, and conceding only 10 points as well was good.
Yeah, what would you have gotten out of that game? Because just for me looking at it, maybe there was question marks about the middle of your defence and stuff during the league or conceding goals, but like, I mean, we don't know if you have the answers to that or not yet because you were so dominant.
Yeah, well, I suppose we didn't concede a goal today, which was a positive. And, you know, it's, I suppose, in hindsight, all these things come up for discussion pre the match. I'm sure a lot of people were giving Clare a good chance of causing an upset or certainly staying with us for a long part of the game. But because of the game, the way the game panned out now, it's almost like Clare will be written off. And I don't think we allowed Clare to play today. I think we played so well ourselves that it meant they weren't able to impose their game on us. So from our point of view, look, we got a big performance from all of the lads that started, the fellas that came in to finish the game. There was a lot of stuff that we've been working on, came to the fore with very professional performance, and we're into a Munster final, so you have to be happy with that.
Yeah, James O'Donoghue seems to be playing a more kind of withdrawn role now, winning that first maybe phase ball and leaving the two fellas inside. That's a little bit new.
Yeah, he played in that kind of role today. We know that he can play close to goal as well, and he's a lethal finisher, and you know, look, a huge positive for James to get that under his belt, and you could see how much it meant to him as well. Even from his body language in the first half, you could see what it meant to him.
He celebrated his first score, yeah.
Yeah, to just to be there and to be playing and to be out and enjoying championship football again, because he's been unfortunate with injuries, and, you know, those kind of big days in Killarney and elsewhere haven't been as plentiful as all of us would have liked. So great to see James out there bouncing with energy, and he'll only get better.
I think the Clare half forward line were trying to drop back and get a few bodies behind the ball, but you were moving the ball so fast. You know, when you play like that, you can get it down the other end of the field and get one-on-ones, you know, rather than being slow and having those lads being able to filter back.
Yeah, that's it. I think we did move the ball quickly today. We had the ball to move it in the first place, and that's the first thing. You just have to get your hands in the ball. I think we did that today, and like you said, we moved it and we moved it at a pace, and when we do that, you know, we've the players to trouble most teams. Yeah.
Is that the key though, moving it fast, faster than the retreating players? Because a lot of teams now are pushing up and kick out, so you will have that chance of getting those one-on-ones, which, you know, you have the full forward line once you can move it fast.
It is, yeah, it is. But look, every game is different. Some teams work so hard to slow you down that you won't get out as quick, and you have to accept that. I think in particular the Division 1 league teams are very good at that. Their forwards work so hard, they make it a bit harder for you to get it from back to front as quickly as you'd like. But look, we're very much a work in progress still. We know that there's going to be bigger challenges down the line, but for a first day out, and we've been waiting so long to get into championship, you'd have to be happy.
Yeah, just finally now, there's 16,000 here. It looked like to me they were all there to see Dave Clifford. Like, there was oohs and ahs every time he got the ball. It's incredible the aura he has around him already.
It is, yeah, it is. And look, in Kerry, people love their stars and they love young forwards in particular. And in fairness to David, he's, you know, he's an up-and-coming player, but he's a great way about him. He's a great manner. He'd remind you of Kieran Donaghy, the way he carries himself, with a nice confidence, but an understated confidence. So I can see why the fans like him.
Yeah, and you have them well trained too. I tried to get Sean O'Shea to talk to me out in the field, and I got a short trip.
That's nothing to do with me, Colin.
Thanks, Evan.
Okay.
One thing I just want to mention out of that audio is that David Clifford has a similar personality to Kieran Donaghy. That filled me with joy.
Yeah.
I met David Clifford coming in off the field. He gave me a big handshake. He's a monster of a man. He's huge, and his hands are huge. This fella is just like, he's a freak of nature as far as I'm concerned. Now, he played well yesterday. Very mature performance, in that there's a lot of pressure on him to perform and to run up scores, and that's what he's done all along. But he's thrown that ball off, even if a point is half on, and he's shown a lot of maturity for, you know, doing that. I know he has to earn his stripes, you know, when you come up onto a senior team and you go, at what stage can I start being the big dog here? Like, he's not anywhere near that point yet. I don't think he can ever be in that Kerry forward line anyways.
No, it's funny. It's like, remember Mark O'Shea told us on Thursday about how big he is when you stand next to him?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, how bigger could he be?
Oh, he's big. He is big, yeah. He is very big.
But it is like, it's a great sort of lesson to younger players all over Ireland, because this is a boy who was by far the best minor we've seen in a long time. And it's not like he's coming in with this pressure, I need to score 3 or 4 points every game.
Yeah.
He's letting the game come to him. He's not going out. And I mean, like the first league game where he was trying to do a bit too much. And now ever since, it's just like, I'll get the ball, pop it off, and if I have a chance to score, I'll score. And everything's very simplified. But I think the whole Kerry team's doing that in attack. They are just all throwing the ball off. And when it comes together, it's magical to watch.
When they play, we saw it against Cork. Like I saw nothing new about Kerry that I haven't seen before. We saw it in the Munster final last year against Cork. They were breathtaking the way they played football. And like James O'Donoghue was playing on the top of the D, like I was mentioning to Fitzmaurice there. And he's breaking for that initial ball. And he's trying to make up that ground that maybe when the half-forward line gets sucked down, he's trying to be there for that kick pass. Then you've got Burns and O'Brien running off him. And then immediately you've got that overlap into that space where they can pop it to Geaney or pop it to Clifford. And it's just beautiful when it comes off. Like, there was one point from a kick out, I think it was to Paul Murphy, was the kick out. He kicked it down to James O'Donoghue, and Micheál Burns was on the burst off Donoghue, and it's just, you know, it's traditional football played at its very best. And like, that's why some people get carried away with Kerry, and I get carried away with the way they play football. But the big test for Kerry will be when they come up against a team that's not allowing that.
Fermanagh.
And, you know, like Fermanagh. Or any team that is not going to allow that. Clare allowed it. Clare were trying to get their half forward line back. You know, there's two different, and this is a very clear distinction between Fermanagh, for example, and Clare, or any team now. All teams are trying to defend with 12 men. 11, 12 men. A lot of them are leaving 2, 3, 4 up forward. Everybody else defending. Now, some of them sprint back before the ball gets back there, and some drift kind of with the play as they're coming back and they're tackling the half-back line coming out. So if you move the ball really fast against option 2, you'll get one-on-one situations down there, because their half-forward line can't run as fast as the ball is being moved. The other team that run back before the ball, you're screwed with them, really, because they're gone back before you have a chance to get down the field. You know what I mean? The other way. So that's the kind of distinction between a Dublin who will drift back, you know, Clare yesterday who are trying to drift back, Kerry who will drift back. So at a point in time, you'll always see a picture of a Tyrone or a Fermanagh with the same amount of players back as a Kerry or Dublin or Clare. But the manner in which they got back there is different, and that's what sets them apart, as one is giving you a chance to play and the other is kind of shutting you down completely. Am I making sense?
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out, or I was trying to figure out, what was Clare's, were they overconfident coming into this game? Like, did they think our forwards are fast enough that we just try and keep those isolated so we'll stop Kerry's men getting back?
Yeah.
We can get the ball in.
They were all over the place, Clare, because they were neither here nor there. Now, Kerry dominated kickouts. They dominated the game. So Clare would try to give the few in to two men full forward line. Tuberty stayed in there and Caelan Sexton stayed in there. But because their half forward line were drifting back and drifting up, they were almost caught in that middle ground where they were neither doing one nor the other. Do you know what I mean? They were neither supporting the two men in there because they were too detached, and they weren't getting back to be men behind the ball when Kerry attacked.
Yeah.
So it was just all over the place for Clare. It really was. It was confused. And that's the danger with these kind of drift defences. And we see even when Dublin play Mayo. Like, I mean, there's one-on-one situations had there, and you can sometimes say, geez, Mayo are able to open Dublin up. No, they'll move the ball. You know what I mean? They move the ball faster than other teams do. If you're slow and ponderous and you're working the ball up through the hand, most teams are going to have some players back, and it's not even before you, they're just coming back with you. You know what I mean? They're coming back with you.
Yeah, it's interesting you say Dublin, because that's one feature that I thought Kerry brought to the table. It was a bit different. They scored 10 points from turnovers, so they were a bit more ravenous than I'd seen them. Like, they were sort of hunting down in packs, they were turning the ball over and just going straight. There was a lot more sort of a restlessness in them. They were trying to get the ball back as quickly as they could, and when they got it to you, it was just punished.
Yeah, and we saw their aggressive kind of push up on the Clare kickouts, and I thought that was an interesting one, because we heard Gary Brennan say last week on the show that Clare didn't want to kick it out, so they actually kicked it out more to their midfield than they usually would.
But Kerry had eight people on the forward line, so they couldn't really go short.
No, they couldn't go short. Yeah. And the odd time they tried to go short, and all it is a weaselly kick out that's landing on the 45, and Gary Brennan sprinting out to it, and by the time he gets to it, gathers it, he's got the momentum, takes him inside the 45, and he ends up passing it back to a cornerback. Why didn't you just chip it to the cornerback anyway? It's like some of these short kickouts, I think, get too complicated, and it's almost like, what benefit? Yes, you're regaining possession, but what's the point of it? You know, tipping it to the cornerback will give you the same result, or driving it once in the first half, they drove it along to Gary Brennan, and he flicked the ball on to somebody running past Jamie Malone, and he was through that area, straight through. I was like, I just don't understand, and I said it to Gary last week when I was interviewing him, I just can't understand that. You've got a big man in midfield, drive that ball out to him as far as you can. You'll have your men goal side by the time Kerry will be pushed up aggressively, so all those men are going to be on goal side if you lose it. If you win it, you're through. Why is a team like Clare trying to mess with this and overcomplicate it? I think some kickouts for some teams are being overly complicated.
Yeah, unless they just weren't expecting it. But then Kerry started this, was back in 2016, remember, against Dublin in the semi-final, where they did that press and they left men free in their back line. Like, they started that whole thing. So unless Clare weren't expecting it, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, they could have had a plan B, but they didn't seem to do that. And that's one thing, not to get into this game, but like, Fermanagh just lumped it long whenever they had to. Everything went down the middle and they didn't worry about that then. Whereas Clare, you're right, got caught because they were overthinking things.
Yeah, no, they did. Finally on that, I thought it was interesting that Kerry went man-to-man on the Clare defence. So Caelan Sexton was picked full forward and Jason Foley was obviously detailed to mark him. But Clare lined up unorthodox before the ball was thrown in, so Caelan Sexton went out wing back. Now, interestingly, Jason Foley followed him out to wing back. So just thinking, like, I mean, while I completely agree with, now Kerry were lucky enough in that Caelan Sexton went back, it must have been just for the throw in or whatever, but I was just thinking, that's a dangerous move for Kerry, because Shanahan was out in the half back line as well. Like, I mean, you want your half back, like, if you've got a half back line, that's your half back line. Just because they have to follow a man, it's very easy move. If that's the way they're going down, or the road they're going down, it's very easy for a team to identify that and absolutely make sure that they place one or two players in different positions to maybe drag the Kerry defenders into places they're not comfortable with. Do you know what I mean? Now, maybe Emma Fitzmaurice will make that readjustment when we didn't get that chance, because Clare kind of filtered back into those spots. But I was surprised to see all the Kerry backs go into unnatural positions to follow the men they were detailed with.
The worry there is because it's Kerry, and we've seen them being opened up in the league because they're all following their men and there's nobody sort of taking account for position and zones. But would you not have detailed two or three tops, I would say, like, especially in the Clare team, to follow them wherever they go? So I would have had Jason Foley follow Caelan Sexton the way Conor McManus gets tagged all the time. So just have those two men with targets on their head and forget about where it is, just have them followed. Would you not do that?
No, you would, but I still don't want Jason Foley wing back at the expense of White or Paul Murphy. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd want my two wing backs that I've picked playing in those positions.
But then do you have Paul Murphy marking Sexton?
Well, I would, because, well, number one, I don't think Caelan Sexton is that dangerous that I would be messing up what my wing back can do. You know what I mean? Or Jason Foley settling into the cornerback position and trying to make that his own. He could potentially, he is a little bit ragged now. I watched him off the ball. He loses his man very easily, goes in around behind him, and I need to see more of Jason Foley. So was it, maybe I'm just being kind of influenced by the Daniel Flynn, the 6 points he got off from that night. But Don't know if he's that natural kind of marker. He seems to have a lot of football in him.
Yeah, and he's a great white hope. Like, he's the one that all the Kerry pundits are talking about. You know,
maybe as a fullback, but not as a cornerback. Yeah, cornerbacks need to be a lot stickier than that.
But they're saying that this is the guy who's going to solve these fullback problems for them. Like, so he does need to be sort of accountable at that standard of he's the one that everyone's talking about.
Yeah, no, he does. He's definitely, well, he's young as well. So Stephen O'Brien, brilliant. Micheál Burns, brilliant. And like Mark O'Shea is concerned that they don't have... their half-forward line goes back too far. These lads have got the engine to do a bit of work, but also get up in, you know what I mean, in support. But again, like, we can finish on this by saying Kerry are brilliant going forward with teams that allow them kick football. Like, the concern for Kerry, obviously, is when to play more defensive teams. That was all I wanted to say on that, because I wanted to mention something about Tomás O'Shea's analysis of Monaghan and Fermanagh yesterday, and it was grand, a perfect analysis, in that we talked a lot about the loop, and we talked about a lot about Paddy McBrearty doing it, and Brennan from Donegal as well doing it. And like, the more you think about it, a loop isn't enough. Like, a loop is good and a loop works against teams that are bloody kind of harmless, but a loop won't work against the Fermanagh that have that many players, and a loop won't work against Tyrone who have that many players back. A loop will only work if you a loop is a supporting run, if the loop has another supporting run. And that's the difference between Dublin and, which is, will sound like Joe Brolly now talking about Tyrone, but Dublin against any defensive team. Paddy Andrews will loop, but it's not always Paddy Andrews that's going to shoot then. Paddy Andrews is popping it off then to a man running down the middle, or a James McCarthy. There has to be more than just a loop, because if that's all Monaghan have is a loop running into two extra men, a loop will create, will bring those extra men to them, and then you have to pop it off to a man running a pit, you know, and then arguably you have to send another man in after the man coming down the middle, because there could be another chance of having to pop it, you know, going in ones into that kind of Fermanagh defence, sure, that's not going to punch any holes into it.
I've never heard loop said so many times in one sentence. But Donegal, like, against Derry, the loop worked because they had so many other options though, and like, Derry's heads were spinning and they popped it over the top, and McHugh was coming from deep.
Their Murphy loops were slicker than Monaghan's.
Yeah,
loops.
They were though, and they had the different elements. It wasn't just McBurty coming in and scoring. He got joy out of it too much, but they had the other options if he wanted to use him, and that's what sort of spooked Derry a bit.
Yeah.
So he will need more of it, the way Monaghan sort of got caught out trying to do that.
And even the one that worked for Colin Walsh against Tyrone that Whelo showed the last week and Tomás showed last night, like, I mean, that's terrible defence. That was an example of terrible defending, where that kind of loop around worked, and the man that was supposed to be marking the fella that came on the loop was just way off him, and then there was nobody in that area to stop him when he ran into it. So, like, I mean, that was very un-Tyrone like, but that was in the second half of the Tyrone game, where Tyrone had taken off Colm Kavanagh, who would have been there to meet that Colin Walsh there, and they had brought on McClure, who was playing an orthodox midfielder. So that wasn't exactly a fair comparison, and in fairness to Tomás, he did point that out. Fermanagh had extra bodies in there. So when you've got extra bodies in there, Jesus, one man coming off the shoulder like that just ain't going to get through it. Like, I mean, you have to be attacking in threes, fours. But then these teams are often afraid of doing that, because if you're attacking in fours or fives and it turns over, sure, there's a whole gap down that side of the field then. So, like, it's this one. This is the thing. If Kerry and Clare had played like, had set up like Monaghan and Fermanagh, Kerry probably would have beaten Clare by four or 5 points. That's the reality of it. Like, I mean, that's how different. If Kerry were as conservative as Monaghan and Clare were as defensive as Fermanagh, what do you think would have been in that game at the end?
Yeah, well, that's...
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's implying that Kerry will be lesser than Kerry. Do you know?
Like, yeah.
If Kerry played their own game and Clare set up like Fermanagh, I think they still would have covered the spread.
Might have just about covered the spread. But, like, I mean, Kerry probably would be miserly in that scenario too, because they don't want to be hit on the break. When you play Fermanagh with that many bodies back, you're paranoid about taking the ball into the tackle, so you're afraid to punch through, and you're afraid to tack in numbers, because again, you're just paranoid about that turnover and that break.
Yeah.
That's the way. So their tactics dictate you being that little bit more miserly than what you usually would be.
Yeah, but I don't understand why Monaghan were way off the pitch. Like, they scored 118 against Tyrone, like, so a better defensive team, and they scored far more. I don't understand why they were really spooked by Fermanagh, and they weren't going at them as much as they should have. They weren't going into the tackle, they weren't breaking tackles. and they're having these wild shots. There were a couple of stats going around about the amount of wides they had, but none of them were really shots that they should have gotten. Well, like, most of them weren't anyway. There was just like Desi Moon coming through with two men hanging off him and just chancing his arm. Right. Kieran Hughes outside of the boot. Like, you know, there was nothing really consistent to what they were doing.
Yeah,
like I know that they were a bit afraid of what Fermanagh were doing, but I think they definitely came down a couple of levels from what they were doing against Tyrone.
Maybe. And maybe there's complacency there. Maybe the heat and the... maybe it's just hard, like in that heat, to continually attack against a wall and take it into the tackle, take that contact, throw it out, have to go again.
Yeah.
That's hard. Like, I mean, that is hard. Like, and it's... I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank God I'm not playing that kind of... Honestly, it would do my head in. But I saw a screenshot Aaron Kernan did last night, and I saw it from watching the Sunday game highlights this morning. Again, there's opportunities. The new thing now seems to be to actually swarm around that 45, and Keane Ward often mentioned it on the podcast. There is space to the one man that's left in on the edge of the square. There's opportunities to give him a ball.
Yeah.
It's never taken. Now, I don't know why, because maybe by the time he comes out and collects it, he's going to meet those lads, turn them back to him anyways. But you very rarely see just give it a go and just give a ball into that fella that's in there. There's a lot of space in front of him, and it doesn't have to bounce in front of him. You could put it straight onto his chest. But Aaron was pointing out that's what he doesn't like about this style, because it's obsession about holding on to possession and being afraid to take a risk, and, you know what I mean, give in that ball.
I would actually, like, in 2018, I would blame offensive coaches, attacking coaches, because they're so paranoid with losing possession and the turnover stats. Like, that's the sort of biggest influence in all the style of play now. You're not allowed to go at a man. When, like, the reality is there's 13 for man and men back there, 14 for a lot of it. Some of them there are tired. Some of them are there to be gotten at. They're not as nimble. But you're not allowed to run at them anymore in case you lose the ball. You're not allowed to kick it because you're going to get roared at for kicking it away. Look at the difference Ian Burke made coming on for Galway against Mayo in that pack defence at that time when there was less men. Like, Mayo had a man sent off. Everybody was back and Ian Burke came on and won so many balls. Like, he was making those honest hard runs inside, won the ball, and then because of that had all Mayo players turning around. Then you had these options coming off. That's how they got the goal. Like, you know, you can find joy with it, but attacking coaches need to be a bit ballsier and stop counting these stats.
You have to be willing to do it. And they were there and they just weren't willing to do it. It's easier to turn back and shift the responsibility on someone else to bring it to the other side.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I tried. So, like, I mean, that's maybe what's going through players' heads, and you don't want to be the one. And I wouldn't mind if you give that in to him and it doesn't work out. Like, I mean, that turnover is not going to kill you because you're all on the outside. If you bring the ball into contact with one or two lads in support on the 45, that and it turns over there, that's much more dangerous than the turnover of a chancing a ball into the lad on the inside, you know?
Yeah,
so, like, I mean,
but the culture is don't give it away and
it
be
is.
Patient and work. Because they see Dublin doing this with a lot of coaches, especially club level, they want people just to keep the ball and assume that someone will open up. But if you're as organised as Fermanagh and as tough as them, and, like, you know, every single one of them were up for it, like, so those gaps didn't appear just because you held the ball for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
You have to do something to try and break them down.
Yeah, no, you definitely do. Look, it's interesting stuff, and like, we definitely don't want the football community. We're having it hard enough with the hurling having such a great time. We don't want a civil war in football where, you know what I mean, one crowd loves this attack defensive football, others don't. I think it's more on the side now of not liking it, and that's what I'm getting now whenever I tweet. A lot of people are tired of that type of football. But again, like Rory Grugan says, what's the other option? Is it that option down?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's, nobody wants that either. So again, I'm giving the 5 out of 10 option. I'm meeting in the middle. Let the good teams play each other, and that's the solution. It has to be the solution. There's no other solution outside of, I don't know, because, like, I mean, you think up of different kind of ways of improving the game. And again, that creates, it's the GA at the end of the day. Everyone whinges about everything. So, like, I mean, I don't know if any of these rule changes will go through or will work because too many people are afraid of them. Like, doesn't counting the hand passes work in the international rules? Like, I mean, to promote kick passes. But of course, you have to move it on. But of course, this is impossible when you move it. When referees, have you seen, I've watched a lot of international rules. I've never seen a referee lose count of the hand pass.
Yeah.
It's not a hard thing to do.
Like,
I mean, give me a break.
And it's interesting. Last week we were talking about basketball. But the thing with basketball is obviously they made the tweaks. But if you go into the opponent's half, you can't come back.
Yeah.
Whereas in the G, like Fermanagh, it was almost like a soccer match. A lot of it, they came back and they held possession.
Back
and,
around the other side.
And the pitch is so big and you've got the ball in your hands and you can do whatever you want. It's very easy to hold possession.
Yeah.
And teams just really tire out coming after you.
The amount of times you see free kicks, which you, when you win a free kick, that's an advantage to your team.
Yeah.
And they're kicked 30 metres backwards.
Yeah. Don't give it away.
Right. Up next, Paddy Power's performance of the weekend. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want
no one-minute man. All right, so Paddy Power's performance the weekend, Conan, and we did a poll on Sports Joe last night. Give me the names and give me the results. I thought last week that maybe the results of this poll were dictating the performance of the weekend, but I actually have the power to overrule this poll, right?
Isn't just decided by you there now. Producer meeting all of yourself.
Give us the results, so let's see what's going on here.
So we had four people in the poll because that's what Twitter allows us. We can still add in a couple of mentions, don't worry. Stephen O'Brien, 8%, in fourth place.
Right.
Paul Ganey, 24%. In third place, Damien Comer of Galway, 27%. In second place, and the winner of Paddy Power's performance of the weekend, and the
maybe
winner,
not.
Oh yes,
or
yes,
not.
Oh God, I got too excited. Anyway, in first place on the Twitter poll, Aidan Breen of Fermanagh, 40%.
40% for Aidan Breen, right? Okay, geez,
that's very good.
Really good. Like the 2 points Aidan Breen scored were out of the top drawer, and like I mean, it's hard to tell when you just see. Highlights, but the space he was afforded for both of those points made me think, how did that not happen on more of a regular basis? Yeah. You know, like, I mean, he just had to slip one man. Well, he actually just ran and went off the outside of his boot, the first one. The second one, he just had to go show a sidestep one way and come in the other way on his left.
On his left.
That looked so easy. I'm wondering how on earth did Fermanagh only manage to score one other point from play?
Yeah.
Wasn't that it? One other point from play, from Jones.
And the most impressive thing about that left footer point was that it was Carl O'Connell that he slipped, and then Carl O'Connell was coming right back after him for a dive and block.
Do you know why
he
slipped
away.
Him? Because I didn't know Aidan Breen had a left foot, and I don't think Carl O'Connell did either.
Exactly,
did you know?
Committed to the right.
Carl O'Connell committed to the right, especially after the first screamer, that Aidan Breen fooled everyone to know that. I didn't know he had that, but I haven't seen Aidan Breen play maybe as much as you have. Did you know he had that left foot of... Everybody knew that up in Ulster. Aidan Breen, we'll talk through a couple more before I make my decision. I think Drew Wiley, for that leadership alone, after the point he scored against Tyrone was good enough, but to score 2 points for a full back at that stage of the game when Monaghan really needed him, like, that showed unbelievable leadership. And I'm sure watching that game live while he took that 1-2 for his second point, first one was beautiful, second, if a little bit unorthodox the way he kicked the first one, but it was beautiful at the same it was a beautifully ugly kind of technique,
did the job.
And then his second one where he took it on a 1-2 on the D and kicked it over, watching that live you're thinking there's no way back for Fermanagh. I'm sure, like, I mean, this is the leader full back stepping up to the plate when he's most needed. Like, I mean, it's just up to that point that was fairy tale stuff for Wiley.
All the forwards were bottling it, basically. Was it McInnespy's the only one to score from the forward line? And then Wiley just said, out of the way, I'll show you how it's done. And like, that was like a Damien Comer-esque point, you know, go straight through the middle, kicking it on the run full speed.
Yeah, not mentioning Damien Comer, he came second, like, he scored 2-2, and like, I mean, it was just the two goals probably came in the 65th and 67th minutes. So, like, I mean, the game was over as a contest at that stage.
Yeah.
Like, Shane Walsh got 4 from play. Like, very difficult to pick a performer of the weekend from that game when we saw very little highlights. But, like, I mean, one thing that jumps out to me two things jump out to me from Galway. Ian Burke started. What a huge statement that is. Like, I've heard on the grapevine in Galway that Kevin McStay has been a little bit slow to accept this Ian Burke role. Now, I don't know how true that is. You know the way you hear things. But he's accepted it now. And this changes Galway into a totally new team, as far as I'm concerned. A totally new team. And Michael Daly came on, who's been out injured all year. My little prediction isn't looking too bad now, buddy, is it? Galway for Sam, and I've got all this year and all next year.
I hope you're right, boy. I hope you're right for the good of football. It's great to see Ian Burke with the shirt tucked in as well. It's a real throwback. It just reminds me of the 90s when players tucked the shirt in and it's hanging out over the shorts.
Yeah,
good player.
And he's so small as well, it probably just accentuates that. Like, I always wore my jersey out. Would you? Do you tuck in your jersey? It's just so
I'm
natural
sure
to tuck it in.
They're so small now. That
you don't notice that they're out hanging down around. Yeah.
They're so small around my big chest. That's
I
what
quite
it is.
Look the kind of hanging down towards the bottom of your shorts, almost like a dress. I quite like that look. So Galway, interesting enough, Flynn and Cook played in midfield. So no Duggan and no Paul Conroy. So, like, I mean, there was an element of maybe of resting a couple of lads because Conroy and Duggan are going to start. The Connacht final, you'd imagine. So, like, I mean, other than that, Brannigan back on the half forward line. You had Johnny Heaney, Shane Walsh, and Brannigan. That half forward line looks really strong. Now, obviously, with Kelly, wing back Sean Kelly, and Johnny Heaney, you actually don't know which of them are playing where because they swap places so often.
Yeah.
You often it's like when Tyrone play Peter Hart, consistently wing forward, but he wears seven, and everyone thinks, oh well, he's a fairly good attacking player for wing back because it's so jumbled in there. You're not actually sure, but Peter Hart always lines out as a forward, but he wears number seven. They do the same thing with Heaney and Kelly, and like, I mean, such a simple thing. I'm sure confuses who's picking him up or is it the wing forward or the wing back?
Yeah, and Kelly got a great goal, a brilliant pass from Damien Comer as well, just completely split the defense open.
Yeah. And by all accounts from reading the match reports, there was I think the best match report I read, Michael Verney on The Independent, right, gave a really good account of how that game went. And it was like, I mean, he was talking about Galway playing a lot more attacking than they had been.
Yeah, well, your little prediction, they're going for it now. You can't just defend and win all Ireland's,
will you? And I said that. I said, Jesus, like, I mean, Galway, they did that against Mayo, and Galway might have a completely different way of playing against Sligo. I called this. Just like I called them to win the All-Ireland. Paul Gainey scored some unbelievable points. Like, he got 24% of the vote. And, like, I mean, he's just a Rolls Royce player wearing a pair of orange luminous boots, red luminous boots. It wouldn't be completely gone. Just doesn't go with the Kerry kit at all. So that's the only thing I would pull him up with. But, like, I mean, there's not much more can be said about Paul Gainey at this stage.
Yeah, if you're going to wear orange boots, you have to be a good shooter and a good scorer and a good player. And Paul Gainey is all those things. So I think he gets away with the orange boots.
Yeah, exactly. But 32 points. Have you ever seen 32 points scored in a game before? I don't think I've never. I've never been involved in a game. I don't think I've ever seen a game where 32 points has been scored and no goals.
It's so not 32 was the best about it all. It wasn't like a few goals as well. It was just like complete efficiency. Just keep popping it over.
And no goal chances. Only Jack Barry had the only goal chance. I meant to mention that in part two, which is definitely something that might concern Kerry. It's not something they're working on. Of course they want to score goals. Jack Barry was true, and you know Jack Barry, you see how many times in a game do you see Jack Barry bearing down in goals and blast it over the bar? I think it's a huge weakness in his game. Keep it bloody down. I've seen him do it so many times that he should have passed it off that time he got through, but I don't remember another goal chance, which is very, very unusual in such a domination.
Well, unless it's just like pull the trigger when you see the target, and like they had so much space and room, they would have found it anyway, like, so they just kept chipping it on. And if you're going to score 32 times, I don't, like, that's not a weakness. I know it's against Clare, but if they're playing the game as they see it, and what they're seeing is posts.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, listen, I'm not going to overrule the vote, Aidan Breen, for those 2 points in a game that they won by one, two screamers from play. You scored 66% of your points from play for a wing forward. There's only three of them, but listen, that's the stats, they don't lie. So we're going to give performance of the weekend to Aidan Breen. And Aidan Breen, I'm delighted to tell you that you're the very first Paddy Power performance of the weekend. Or no, he's not, he's the second one. But we can tell you that you're getting a pair of boxer shorts, or the underwear, the cool green underwear that Nicholas Bentner wore, aren't I right?
Yeah.
So you'll be absolutely delighted with that. So we're hoping to get a photo of you when you put them on. Right, thanks to everyone putting the show together, and thanks to Paddy Power, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.